Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the Murder Tape Chronicles. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present Glassjaw, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1. I spat out a mouthful of blood and felt the canvas sway beneath me. The referee's voice echoed, counting 7, 8, over my head. I blinked sweat and blood out of my eyes, blinking up at the spinning arena lights. The crowd's roar was a muffled rumble in my ringing ears. I could get up. Hell, my body screamed at me to get up, but I stayed down. I had to stay down. This fight was fixed, just like all the others. My name's Tommy, and I'm a washed-up boxer with a glass jaw and a debt to the mob. On a good day, I'm a second-rate punching bag. On a bad day, I'm a puppet on strings held by guys like Vinny and his crew. Tonight was a bad day. I'd taken a dive in the fourth round, exactly as ordered. The canvas smelled like sweat and despair, and I was face down in both. 9-10. The referee waved his arms, signaling the knockout. Match over. Another humiliating loss added to my record. Boos and cheers swirled together above me. I rolled onto my back, blinking at the ceiling. The stadium's neon lights burned my eyes. In the distance, I heard the announcer declare the other guy the winner. Good for him. He got his win bonus. I got my payoff for losing. Everybody's happy except my pride. A gloved hand appeared in my blurred vision. It was my opponent, leaning over with a sportsmanlike smile. The kid fought hard, only it wasn't his punches that put me down. I had to remind myself not to hate him. He had nothing to do with the fix. I forced a grimace that might pass for a smile and grabbed his hand, letting him pull me to my feet. The crowd clapped politely at the show of respect. If only they knew. My opponent, some fresh-faced kid whose name I'd already forgotten, gave me a pat on the back. "Hell of a fight, man," he said, eyes shining. I almost laughed at the irony. "Hell of a dive, more like it." My ribs ached from a few real shots I let him land, but I'd survived worse. "Yeah, you got me good," I replied, my voice rough as gravel. I hoped the bitterness in my throat sounded like exhaustion instead of self-disgust. The kid nodded and raised his gloves to acknowledge the cheering crowd. I slipped out under the ropes, eager to get out of the limelight and into the shadows where I belonged. Back in the locker room, I peeled off my gloves and wraps with shaking hands. Every knuckle throbbed. I caught a glimpse of myself in the grimy mirror, a 30-something ex-contender with a busted eyebrow and a busted soul. My dark hair was matted with sweat. Blood trickled from a cut over my eye, mixing with sweat to leave a pink trail down my cheek. I looked exactly like what I was, a loser. A loser on purpose. The door creaked open behind me. I tensed reflexively, half expecting some goon to jump me for screwing up. Instead, a familiar voice oozed into the room. "Tommy boy, nice performance out there." Vincent Vinny Caruso slid inside, dressed in a slick suit and a shark smile. He was flanked by two of his muscle-bound goons, one on either side like ugly bookends. I felt anger coil in my stomach at the sight of Vinny's grin. Performance. That word cut deeper than any punch. He didn't even pretend this was a real sport. For him, it was just another act in his circus of corruption. I forced a nonchalant shrug and turned away to hide the contempt in my eyes. "You went down a little earlier than planned," Vinny continued, voice casual but carrying an edge. He sauntered closer, polished Italian loafers clicking on the tile floor. "Round 4, we expected 5. You almost cost us some serious dough on the timing, pal." I crumpled the bloody tape from my hands and tossed it in the trash. My jaw tightened. "Got caught with a lucky shot," I muttered, grabbing a towel to wipe my face. "The kid packs a punch. What can I say?" Vinny stepped into my peripheral vision, arms crossed. He was a short man with slicked back gray-streaked hair and cold eyes. The kind of eyes that size up weakness the way a butcher sizes up a slab of meat. "Lucky shot, huh? Funny, I didn't see it land." He tapped the side of his nose with a knowing smirk. "I know you, Tommy. You're a better actor than fighter these days." My shoulders stiffened, shame and anger swirling in my chest. One of the goons snickered. I recognized him, Marco, a heavy with ham-sized fists. I'd sparred with him once in Vinny's gym, and he'd tried to break my ribs as a joke. The other thug leaned against the wall, cracking his knuckles. This little locker room visit was more intimidation than congratulation. A reminder of my place. What do you want, Vinny? I sighed, turning to face him fully. My voice was flat. I didn't have the energy to dance around pleasantries. Vinny gave an exaggerated, offended look. What? I'm here to pay my star performer, of course. He reached into his jacket pocket and pulled out an envelope. I could see it was thick with cash. He extended it to me between two fingers, as if it were a dead rat. I snatched the envelope, resisting the urge to fling it back at his face. My dignity had a price tag, and it was about $5,000 per dive. Blood money to keep my knees on the canvas and the mob's bookies happy. I stuffed the envelope into my duffel bag without counting. I already knew it was all there. Vinny wouldn't short me. A dead fighter can't throw fights, after all. Vinny's grin widened like we'd just done friendly business. But he didn't leave. He lingered, exchanging a glance with Marco. I felt a prickle of unease on my neck. Here comes the catch, I thought. Your brother, Vinny said lightly, eyes on me. Mikey's fight is next week. Kid's climbing the ranks fast. At the mention of Mikey, I froze. A drip of cold sweat slid down my spine. Mikey. My kid brother was the one bright spot left in my life, and Vinny knew it. Mikey had talent, real talent, and a good heart. Too good for this dirty game. I tried to keep my face neutral, but my fists clenched involuntarily. Vinny pretended not to notice my posture. He inspected his manicured nails as he spoke. He's the undercard for that big show at the Garden. Gonna be a lot of eyes on him. We're all very proud. His voice was oily, each word dripping with false praise. I swallowed, forcing words out steadily. Mikey works hard. He's a clean fighter. He's not like me. I nearly said not in your pocket, but caught myself. Showing my cards to Vinny was a bad idea. Vinny chuckled. Yeah, the kid's got a future. Could be champ someday, who knows? That is, if he plays ball. He took a step closer, lowering his voice conspiratorially. The stench of his expensive cologne mixed with the sour smell of my sweat. See, some mutual friends of ours have a vested interest in his upcoming match. They might approach him with an offer, like we did with you. A spike of protective anger flared in my chest. Leave Mikey out of this. I growled before I could stop myself. My voice echoed off the tile, and the two goons immediately stood up straighter, readying to pounce if needed. I shot them a glare and tried to calm down. He's just a kid, Vinny. He doesn't know how this works. He fights clean. Vinny's friendly demeanor iced over in an instant. He stepped right up to me, his face inches from mine. I could see the pores on his nose, smell the mint on his breath. Then he'd better learn fast, Vinny hissed, each word a dagger. We all start out believing in fairy tales, Tommy, until life knocks us flat. He poked a finger hard into my chest. I need you to make sure Mikey understands the score. If he doesn't, well, there are consequences. For both of you. My heart hammered, blood pounding in my ears. I wanted to break his finger, maybe his neck too, but Marco loomed behind him like a shadow. I unclenched my fists slowly, raising them in a mock surrender. All right, I'll talk to him, I said through gritted teeth. Just don't do anything stupid. He'll listen to me. I doubted that last part even as I said it. Mikey was stubborn. But I'd damn well try. Vinny stared me down, eyes searching mine for defiance. I dropped my gaze first, playing the beaten dog. Finally, he gave a satisfied nod and stepped back. Good. That's all I ask. His smile returned as quickly as it had vanished, like a switch flipping. You take care, champ. Rest up that chin of yours. He patted my cheek twice in a condescending farewell. I fought the urge to bite his hand. Then with a jerk of his head, he signaled his thugs to follow him out. The door closed behind them, leaving me alone with my rage. Fuck, I roared, hurling my water bottle against the wall. It exploded in a shower of plastic and water. Pain shot through my busted knuckles from the sudden movement. I didn't care. I sank down onto the wooden bench, breathing hard, trying to get myself under control. This was my nightmare, Mikey getting dragged into the mud that had swallowed me. He was supposed to be the one who made it out clean. I had gone along with Vinny's demands all this time partly so Mikey wouldn't have to. Now the bastards wanted him too. I wiped a hand over my face, winced as I touched the cut over my eye. A streak of blood smeared on my palm. In the dingy fluorescent light of the locker room, it looked black. I felt a chill despite the sweat on my skin. How was I going to protect Mikey from Vinny and the mob? He wouldn't listen to me if I told him to take a fall. Mikey fought with heart and honor, concepts that Vinny treated like jokes. And if Mikey refused them? I shuddered, not wanting to imagine the consequences. The mob didn't handle rejection well. A lesson could be deadly. I dressed slowly, each movement aching. My body felt as defeated as my mind. After pulling on a hoodie and jeans, I grabbed my duffel. The envelope of cash inside felt heavy, as if the blood money itself had weight. For a second, I considered tossing it in the trash with my wraps. But that would be stupid. I might hate myself for taking it, but I had to keep up appearances. I needed Vinny to think he owned me, until I figured out a plan. Outside the arena, the night air was crisp on my face. It was past midnight, and the city beyond the service exit was quiet for New York. A few distant horns, streetlights casting pale halos in the thin fog coming off the Hudson. I limped toward the parking lot, where my beat-up Chevy waited. Each step sent a jolt of pain through my bruised ribs. As I walked, a lone figure detached from the shadows near a dumpster. I tensed, but then I recognized the lanky frame and easy gait. It was Mikey. He must have been waiting for me. Mikey jogged up, concern etched on his boyish face. He was 22, a decade younger than me, and had the same dark hair and brown eyes we both inherited from our old man. But where mine were hardened, Mikey's eyes were still bright, full of hope. Seeing the swelling on my face, he shook his head. "Jesus, Tommy, are you all right?" He touched my cheek gently where a purple bruise was blooming. I flinched more from guilt than pain. Mikey didn't know the truth about my fights. At least, I'd never admitted it. But he wasn't stupid. He had to suspect something by now. "I'm fine," I muttered, trying to sidestep him and keep walking. Just another loss, nothing new. Mikey followed, worry turning to frustration. "Nothing new, yeah. That's what bothers me. I know you could have taken that guy. What happened?" He grabbed my arm, stopping me. "Tommy, are you throwing these fights?" he asked in a low, hesitant voice, as if afraid to say it out loud. My gut twisted. There it was, the question I dreaded. I yanked my arm away and tried to play it off. "Don't be ridiculous," I snapped, not meeting his eyes. "He got a lucky punch. That's all." Mikey stepped in front of me, refusing to let me pass. "Cut the crap, bro," he said, voice rising. "I've seen you train. I've looked up to you my whole life. The Tommy I know wouldn't just fold like that. Not unless someone made him." I glared at him, anger flaring defensively. "You don't know what you're talking about, kid. Back off." The lie tasted sour, but I couldn't drag him into this. He needed to stay naive, for his own safety. He didn't back off. Stubborn, just like me. Mikey's jaw set in that way that meant he wasn't going to drop it. "Who is it? Is it your manager? Those thugs I saw around you last month? Are they threatening you?" He fired questions, each one hitting closer to truth. "I can help, we can go to the police." "Enough," I roared, the word echoing in the empty parking lot. My heart was pounding. I grabbed Mikey by the shoulders and lowered my voice to a harsh whisper. "Listen to me. You keep your damn nose out of this. You worry about your own fight, hear me? Don't go poking around my business." Mikey looked startled by my outburst. He shrugged off my hands, eyes narrowing. "Your business?" he repeated angrily. "You're my brother, Tommy. If something happens to you, it's my business. And I don't need protecting. I'm not a kid anymore." "To me you are," I said, voice cracking slightly. "Mikey, you have a real shot at this career. Don't ruin it by getting mixed up in my mistakes." I took a breath, softening my tone. "I can handle my own shit. Promise me you'll focus on your fight, and let me deal with my problems my way." Mikey stared at me long and hard. Under the streetlight, I saw the conflict in his eyes. Finally, he exhaled and looked away. "Fine," he muttered. "Have it your way. I just hope you know what you're doing." He turned and started walking off, towards the bus stop down the block, where he probably came from. A pang shot through me, guilt, love, fear all mixed. "Mikey," I called after him. He paused and glanced back. I struggled for something to say. "I'm throwing fights for the mob. No, too dangerous. I'm doing it to protect you. Too late now, and he wouldn't accept that. Finally I managed. I'm proud of you. You know that, right?" Mikey's hardened expression softened just a bit. He nodded. "I know," he said quietly. "I'm proud of you too, when you're actually trying." The last words were tinged with disappointment that cut me to the bone. Before I could respond, he turned and jogged away into the night to catch his ride. I stood there watching until he disappeared into the darkness. My little brother, practically the only family I had left. I rubbed my aching temples. The headache that always followed a dive was throbbing behind my eyes. Or maybe that was just stress. Climbing into my old Chevy, I slammed the door and just sat for a moment behind the wheel. The silence was heavy. I punched the steering wheel suddenly, a burst of frustration. Mikey deserved better than this. He deserved better than me. I started the car and pulled out, tires crunching on gravel. As I drove out of the lot, I made a silent vow. I didn't know how yet, but I would find a way to keep Mikey safe from Vinny and his mob cronies. Even if it meant throwing every fight for the rest of my sorry career, or finding some way out altogether. In my rearview mirror, the empty arena loomed under the night sky, the ring inside now dark and silent. I felt like I was leaving the scene of a crime, my own self-betrayal. Little did I know, the real crimes and betrayals were yet to come. And when they did, they'd hit harder than any punch I'd ever taken. Chapter 2. A week later, Madison Square Garden buzzed with the electric energy of fight night. The air smelled of popcorn, sweat, and anticipation. Up in the cheap seats, the crowd was already hollering and stomping, eager for blood. I weaved through the throng of spectators clutching beers and foam fingers, making my way toward the locker rooms. Tonight was Mikey's big night. His first appearance on a high-profile undercard. He was fighting a rugged veteran 10 pounds heavier, a dangerous matchup that worried me sick. But Mikey had been confident and excited when I talked to him yesterday. Too excited to notice my forced smile and the dark cloud of dread following me. As I neared the locker room area, I was stopped by a beefy security guard. "Fighters and authorized personnel only," he grunted, eyeing me up and down. I realized I probably looked like any other fan in my worn jacket and jeans. "It's okay, he's with me," came a familiar voice from behind the guard. I peered around the broad shoulders to see Johnny Hooks Hernandez, Mikey's trainer, beckoning me in. Hooks was an old-timer, a wiry man in his 60s with quick hands and a permanent scowl. He had taken Mikey under his wing last year. I trusted him, mostly. The guard stepped aside and let me pass. Hooks gave me a curt nod as I joined him in the hallway outside Mikey's dressing room. "Thought you'd be here earlier," Hooks muttered, chewing on an unlit cigar. "Kid's been asking for you." My stomach tightened. "How is he?" I asked quietly. Hooks jerked his chin toward the door. "Nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. But ready. This is a big step up for him." His sharp eyes flicked to me, noticing my own tension. "You okay, Tommy? That shiner on your eye finally fading." I absently touched the yellowish bruise around my eye from last week's dive. "I'm fine," I said. "I just need to talk to Mikey. Alone, if that's all right." Hooks sighed. "Make it quick. We're on in 20 minutes. Don't go filling his head with any of your ghosts." He gave me a pointed look, then turned and walked off down the hall, barking orders at a cutman to get the gear ready. I took a deep breath and pushed into the locker room. Mikey was sitting on a bench, already in his red trunks and robe, hands wrapped in white tape. He looked up, and a huge grin spread across his face. "Tommy, you made it." He jumped to his feet and met me with a brotherly hug. Up close, I could feel a slight tremor in his body, nerves. But his face was all determination. I held him by the shoulders, looking him over. He looked sharp and ready, if a little pale under the fluorescent lights. "Wouldn't miss it, kid," I replied, attempting a grin. "Fight night at the Garden? Big deal." Mikey laughed, but his eyes searched mine, maybe looking for any trace of last week's confrontation. "I'm glad you're here. I wasn't sure if you would be after, you know." He trailed off, not finishing the thought. We both remembered our argument in the parking lot. I rubbed the back of my neck awkwardly. "Yeah. Look, Mikey, about that. I'm sorry. I was out of line. It was the best I could do at an apology without confessing everything." He nodded slowly. "It's okay. I worry about you." "I know," I said softly. An awkward silence hung for a moment. To break it, I gestured to his gear. "Your gloves ready?" He pointed to the table, where a pair of bright red gloves lay next to his headgear. I picked one glove up, turning it in my hand for distraction. My heart was heavy with what I needed to say. I cleared my throat. "Listen, Mikey. There's something important we gotta discuss. About this fight." Mikey frowned slightly. "What about it?" I lowered my voice. "Has anyone approached you? Offered you anything to maybe take it easy or go down in a certain round?" I studied his face carefully. His eyes widened with realization of what I meant. "No, Tommy. No one's tried to fix anything with me. I told you, I'm fighting clean. His voice was firm, maybe even offended I'd ask. But then he hesitated. Well, actually Vinny did swing by the gym a couple days ago to wish me luck, if that counts. A surge of alarm. Vinny talked to you? I tried to keep my tone casual, but my fists clenched around the glove. Yeah, Mikey said, oblivious to my rising anger. He was sweet as pie, actually. Told me I had a bright future, and he'd be betting on me to win. Mikey shrugged. I figured he was just trying to be supportive since he's your manager, or whatever. I felt a bitter taste in my mouth. Vinny betting on Mikey to win. That could mean anything. Or nothing. Damn. I wished I knew what Vinny's plan was. If he wanted Mikey to win, maybe the fix was on the opponent instead? Or maybe he was lying to Mikey, trying to lull him. My gut told me something was off. I put the glove down and gripped Mikey's shoulder. Kid, promise me you'll keep your guard up out there. And if anything feels wrong, you get out of there. Even if you have to fake an injury or something. Okay. Mikey's frown deepened. Tommy, what are you talking about? Nothing's gonna feel wrong. I've trained for this. I'm ready. I realized I was scaring him with my intensity. I tried to smile. Humor your big brother, all right? I got a bad feeling. Just promise me. He studied me a moment, then nodded slowly. All right, I promise. But you're acting weird. Is there something you know that I don't? Before I could respond, the door swung open and Hooks poked his head in. Mikey, time to go, kid. Let's show this crowd what you got. His eyes flicked to me. Tommy, out front if you're watching. We gotta do our pre-fight. My heart rate ticked up. Time was up. Whatever warning I could give Mikey had to be now or never. Hooks disappeared again, leaving the door ajar. I squeezed Mikey's arm. Just remember what I said. Keep your guard up, watch for anything, dirty. I struggled for words. I love you, kid. Go do your thing. Mikey smiled, the kind of innocent smile that had long faded from my own face. Love you too, Tommy. See you after I win, yeah? He bumped his fist lightly against my chin in a playful jab, trying to lighten my mood. Then he turned to gather his mouthguard and gloves. I left the locker room feeling like I'd swallowed a bucket of ice. A bad feeling gnawed at me, but I didn't have any concrete reason to stop the fight. Hell, maybe I was just being paranoid. Maybe Vinny was genuinely betting on Mikey to win clean. But why would he? Vinny never left things to chance if he could rig them. I found my way to the arena floor. I didn't want to sit too close, didn't want to risk running into any of Vinny's associates in the VIP section. So I hung back along a railing near one of the exits. From there I had a decent view of the ring and could beat a retreat if needed. The lights dimmed for the undercard introductions. Loud music blared as Mikey's opponent, Daryl the Hammer Hayes, made his way to the ring. Hayes was a burly middleweight who'd been around. Tough, durable, and with a mean streak, I'd seen him fight before. He was the kind of boxer who'd keep pounding you even when you were down, until the ref dragged him off. Something about Hayes always struck me as cruel. When Mikey's turn came, a cheer went up from a pocket of the crowd. Local supporters, probably folks from our neighborhood who knew him. I couldn't help a small swell of pride and anxiety as I watched my little brother stride out under the bright lights. He looked calm, focused. His red robe flowed behind him, and even from a distance, I saw the determined set of his jaw. He hopped through the ropes into the ring, bouncing on his toes. The kid looked good. They announced his name, Michael Grayson, a decent cheer, and Daryl the Hammer Hayes, a mix of cheers and boos. The fighters met in the center for instructions. Mikey nodded at whatever the ref said, gloves raised. The crowd noise fell into a dull roar as the fighters went back to their corners. I held my breath. Ding. The bell for round one clanged. Mikey came out quick, jabbing sharp. Hayes, the veteran, took the center and stalked forward guard high. Mikey was faster, circling, popping a few jabs off Hayes' gloves. Good, keep moving, I urged silently. Mikey snapped a jab to Hayes' cheek that got through, drawing a grunt from the bigger man. The first round was mostly a feeling out. Mikey landed some crisp shots. Hayes lumbered after him, throwing heavy hooks that mostly missed or caught Mikey's arms. My heart settled a touch. Mikey's technique was solid tonight. He took round one easily on points by my unofficial card. Round two started similar, but Hayes began adjusting. He cornered Mikey briefly and landed a thudding body shot that I heard from the stands. I winced as Mikey clinched to recover. They broke, and Mikey fired back with a combo to keep Hayes honest. The crowd hooped at the exchange. Hayes sneered and nodded, as if acknowledging Mikey had guts. It was in round three things began to turn. Hayes came out aggressive, unexpectedly agile for his size, cutting off the ring. Mikey got caught by a jab cross sequence, and I saw his legs wobble for the first time. "Keep your hands up," I muttered under my breath, fingers gripping the railing. Mikey shook it off and circled away, but Hayes smelled blood. The bigger man was closing distance faster now. Mikey threw a right hook that clipped Hayes, but Hayes barreled through with a vicious left uppercut. I saw it slam into Mikey's ribs with a sickening force. Even over the crowd, I heard Mikey's pained gasp. That one hurt him. "Come on, kid, clinch him," I whispered urgently. Mikey tried to grab Hayes to stop the assault, but Hayes shoved him off and unleashed a barrage. Hook, hook, straight. The punches crashed into Mikey's guard. He blocked most, but one got through to his temple. Mikey stumbled, and Hayes pounced, driving him into the ropes with raw power. My chest was tight. This wasn't just Hayes stepping up his game. This was a man possessed. He was throwing bombs, and Mikey was in trouble. The only saving grace was the bell ringing moments later, ending round three. Mikey made it to his stool, but he moved gingerly, one arm tight to his ribs. I was breathing hard as if I'd been the one in the ring. Something felt off. Hayes looked too motivated. Sure, a fighter smells weakness and goes for it, but there was an intensity in his eyes. It reminded me of a dog let off its leash to maul someone. Hooks in the corner was icing Mikey's side and talking to him intensely. I wished I could hear what he was saying. The ref hovered near their corner, probably warning Mikey he'd stop the fight if he didn't show more defense. Round four began, and my sense of dread grew heavier. Hayes charged immediately, throwing a looping overhand. Mikey ducked it and landed a counter uppercut to Hayes' chin, his best punch of the fight so far. Hayes' head snapped back. The crowd roared at the clean hit. Mikey pressed forward, sensing opportunity, and landed two more quick shots. For a second, it looked like Hayes might go down. He staggered, then his eyes went strangely calm. To my surprise, Hayes smiled through his mouthguard. It was the chilling grin of a man who doesn't care how much pain he takes. Then Hayes did something I couldn't believe. He deliberately dropped his gloves and let Mikey hit him. Mikey, caught off guard by the opening, threw a hesitant jab that connected. Hayes took it flush, still smiling. The bastard was taunting him, playing possum. "Don't fall for it, Mikey," I growled under my breath, nails digging into my palm. But Mikey saw an opponent defenseless and did what any hungry young fighter would. He went for the knockout. He stepped in with a big right cross to Hayes' jaw. It was a mistake. Hayes had set a trap. He braced and rolled with the right hand, and as Mikey's momentum carried him in, Hayes unleashed a brutal counter, a right hook swinging from the floor, aiming for Mikey's head. It connected with a crack like a gunshot. The impact was devastating. Mikey's head snapped sideways. Sweat sprayed in a halo. His body went limp before it even hit the canvas. My brother crumpled face first to the mat, arms sprawled awkwardly. He wasn't moving. A collective gasp erupted from the crowd. I heard myself scream Mikey, but the roar around me swallowed it. I vaulted over the railing without thinking, shoving past startled spectators. Security B. Damned, I had to get to him. In the ring, the referee had begun the count, but I could tell by his panicked expression and how Mikey lay utterly still that this was bad. Hayes backed away to a neutral corner, chest heaving, that eerie grin now replaced by a blank look. Hooks was already halfway through the ropes from the corner, yelling that Mikey was hurt. The ref waved off the remaining count at six and knelt by Mikey. I slid under the bottom rope, dropping to my knees at my brother's side. "Mikey! Mikey, wake up!" I shouted, my voice breaking. His eyes were half open, rolled back. He wasn't responding. He wasn't breathing right either. Each breath was a faint, labored rattle. Blood trickled from his nose and mouth onto the canvas. Chaos broke out around us. The stadium lights seemed to glare unbearably bright as medics rushed in with a stretcher. Some of the crowd was cheering the knockout, oblivious to the seriousness. Others had fallen into an anxious hush, seeing that the fighter wasn't getting up. I felt a strong arm pull me back to give the medic space. It was one of the paramedics. I hovered just behind as they carefully turned Mikey onto his back and began CPR. Someone was shouting about getting a defibrillator. My vision tunneled. This couldn't be happening. Not Mikey. Not like this. Hooks stood beside me, his lined face ashen, the unlit cigar fallen from his lips. "Jesus Christ," he whispered over and over. Time went surreal. I watched, numb, as they tried everything. Compressions, oxygen mask, an injection of something. After what felt like an eternity, they loaded Mikey onto the stretcher, strapping him down. His head lolled to one side. They put a neck brace on him and placed an oxygen mask over his mouth, though I still didn't see any sign of consciousness. I stumbled after them out of the ring, down a tight hallway toward an ambulance bay. Hooks and I trailed behind as the paramedics worked feverishly, one on top of Mikey doing compressions as they wheeled him. Somehow I ended up in the ambulance with Mikey, while Hooks said he'd follow in a car. I gripped Mikey's cold hand the entire ride, my own hands shaking violently. I was dimly aware of the paramedic radioing the hospital. Code blue, traumatic cardiac arrest, 22-year-old male, boxing injury. I kept praying in my head, "Hang on, kid. Please hang on." The next few hours were a blur of harsh hospital lights, forms, and agonizing waiting. They rushed Mikey into surgery for a brain hemorrhage. I was left pacing the ER waiting area like a caged animal. At some point, Hooks arrived and tried to calm me, but I barely heard him. Word must have spread because a couple of boxing officials and reporters showed up, asking questions I couldn't handle. Hooks ran interference, giving them curt statements about an accident in the ring. Accident. My gut churned. That was no accident. Hayes had baited Mikey, then delivered a kill shot. It's a legal move in boxing, sure, but something about it felt planned. The way Hayes smiled, I couldn't shake it. After what felt like an eternity, a doctor approached. I knew from his face before he even spoke. He wore the drawn expression of someone who has to deliver bad news often. "Mr. Grayson," he addressed me. My voice caught in my throat. How is he?" The doctor sighed. "Your brother sustained a severe intracerebral hemorrhage. We tried to relieve the pressure, but it was too extensive. I'm very sorry. He didn't make it." The words hit me like a punch. I swayed on my feet. "No," I croaked, shaking my head. "No, that can't. That's not possible. He's strong. He's..." My legs buckled. Hooks caught me under the arm and eased me into a chair as I started to collapse. "I'm sorry," the doctor repeated quietly. He offered some additional words, something about time of death, condolences, but they washed over me unheard. All I could think was Mikey's gone. My kid brother was dead. I don't know how long I sat there, staring blankly at the floor. Hooks was silent beside me, a trembling hand on my shoulder. Finally, he spoke, voice rough. "Tommy, I'll take care of the press. This kind of thing, it's going to be a big story. You don't have to talk to anyone right now." I nodded numbly. None of it mattered. Let them write their stories about the tragic young fighter and the dangers of boxing. It was all bullshit. My brother's dreams, his future gone. Eventually, I stood. My body felt leaden, heavy with grief and exhaustion. "I need to see him," I mumbled. Hooks hesitated, then guided me down a hallway to a quiet room. Mikey lay on a gurney, covered to his chest with a white sheet. They'd cleaned the blood from his face, arranged him to look peaceful, but nothing could hide how unnaturally still he was. That energetic spark was extinguished. I collapsed beside him, taking his hand. It was still warm. "Hey, kid," I whispered, voice shaking. "I'm here." My vision blurred with tears I couldn't hold back anymore. "I'm so sorry, Mikey. I'm sorry I couldn't protect you." My tears dripped onto the sheet. I clenched his hand as if I could squeeze life back into it. Each second in that silence broke something inside me. Finally, I pressed my forehead to his and sobbed like I hadn't since we were children. I don't know how long I stayed by Mikey's side. Long enough for my tears to run dry, leaving only a cold emptiness and a burning anger. Because as the shock faded, that anger grew. This wasn't just a freak accident of the sport. It felt orchestrated. I recalled Vinny's slick words, his insistence that Mikey play ball, his assurance of betting on Mikey to win. My gut told me that was a lie, a setup. And Hayes, that smile before the knockout. The way he invited the punch. Professional fighters don't take unnecessary shots unless there's a reason. What if Hayes had been paid to prolong the fight and deliver maximum punishment? Maybe Mikey was supposed to take a fall, didn't, and Hayes made him pay? Or maybe Mikey was winning and someone wanted to ensure he lost, permanently. Betrayal, murder, backstabbing. All the words pounded in my skull. Someone had betrayed the sport, betrayed Mikey, to turn a profit or send a message. And that someone had to be Vinny or whoever Vinny answered to. This had their stink all over it. I gently laid Mikey's hand down and stood, wiping my face on my sleeve. I leaned over and kissed his forehead. His skin was cooling. "Rest easy, brother," I whispered, my voice hollow. "I'll take it from here." Walking out of that hospital room was the hardest thing I've ever done. My legs felt like lead, but my mind was razor sharp now, locked onto one thought. Find out who did this. Make them pay. Hooks approached in the hall, eyes red. Tommy, if you need anything, anything at all. I turned to Hooks, and something in my expression must have frightened him, because he stepped back. Who tampered with the fight, Hooks? I asked softly. Hooks blinked. Tampered? It was a clean fight, Tommy. A damn tragedy, but clean. Hayes just caught him with a bad one. That's boxing. I grabbed the old trainer by the front of his shirt and slammed him against the wall. Bullshit. I snarled, face inches from his. I barely recognized my own voice. Hayes set him up. That wasn't a normal KO, and you know it. Hooks raised his hands, shaking. Tommy, calm down. Did Vinny get to Hayes? I shouted, spit flying. Or to you. Did someone tell you not to throw in the towel? Tell me the truth, old man. Hooks paled. Nobody told me anything. I was about to throw the damn towel when the ref stepped in. It happened so fast, he took a ragged breath. Look, I've seen a lot of fights. Sometimes a fighter gets killed. It doesn't always need a grand conspiracy. You know that. I felt my grip on his shirt loosening. My anger was a wildfire looking for direction, and Hooks might not be the one to burn. I released him with a shove, and he slumped, rubbing his chest. I'm sorry for your brother, truly, he said, voice shaky. Mikey was like family to me, too. If I suspected foul play, I'd tell you. But I didn't see anything except Hayes fighting dirty, like he always does. Fighting dirty. That was Hayes' style, always on the edge of the rules. Maybe Hooks was right. Maybe it was just Hayes being Hayes. But my instincts screamed that it wasn't that simple. Vinny's threats still rang in my ears. If he doesn't play ball, there are consequences. This was one hell of a consequence. I left Hooks and wandered out of the hospital in a daze. Dawn was breaking over the city, pale light pushing back the darkness. The world was still turning, like nothing had happened. It made me furious and heartsick at the same time. By the curb, I lit a cigarette with trembling hands, inhaling deep to steady myself. I hadn't smoked in years, but right now I needed something, anything. The smoke burned my lungs, but brought a strange calm. Mikey's gone, I thought, and part of me still refused to accept it. But another part had already begun to plan. They took my brother from me. They. Whether it was Vinny, Hayes, or someone higher up, I knew in my bones Mikey was dead because of them. I had been a pawn in their game for too long. I thought I could keep my head down and do as I was told to protect him. And now he was gone anyway, because I played by their rules. I flicked the cigarette, but into the gutter, and squared my shoulders. No more. If I kept being the mob's broken tool, Mikey would just be another forgotten victim of their greed. I wasn't going to let that happen. I was done being used, done staying down when I could get back up. They wanted a fall guy. They wanted a punching bag. They were about to find out this punching bag had a little fight left. I left the hospital with funeral arrangements to come later and vengeance burning a hole in my soul. As I stepped back into the waking streets of New York, I knew one thing for sure. The fix was off. I was going to war. Chapter 3. 3 nights after Mikey's death, I found myself crouched in the shadows behind a row of trash cans in an alleyway, adrenaline pumping through my veins. Above me, a flickering street lamp cast a sickly yellow glow on the back door of a nightclub, Vinny Caruso's favorite nightclub. The sign out front read Silver Crest in neon script, but around here everyone just called it Caruso's. Word on the street was that Vinny was drowning his sorrows here tonight. Acting heartbroken about Mikey to anyone who'd listen, buying rounds for the house in memory of the kid. The hypocrisy made me sick, but it also brought him out in the open. I had tried calling Vinny's phone every day since the fight, but he'd dodged me. When I showed up at his office, his secretary claimed he was out. He was avoiding me, which only made me more certain he had something to hide. I peered around the edge of the dumpster, eyes fixed on the club's back door. My breath misted in the cool night air. I'd been waiting for over an hour, tense as a coiled spring, for Vinny to make his exit. My fists ached from clenching. Tucked in the waistband of my jeans was a loaded .38 revolver, an old piece that used to belong to our dad. I hadn't fired a gun in years. Boxing was my trade, but I wasn't stupid. Vinny's goons would likely be armed, and I couldn't fight bullets with fists. Still, I hoped it wouldn't come to a shootout. I wanted Vinny alive, cornered, and answering my questions. I ran through the plan again in my head. Grab Vinny when he comes out the back, drag him to my car at the end of the alley, and then drive somewhere quiet to make him talk. I had duct tape, rope, and plenty of rage, all the tools necessary to scare the truth out of a rat. Finally, the metal door creaked open. Laughter spilled out along with music from inside and the silhouettes of two men. One was recognizable, Vinny's stocky frame and signature suit. The other was a tall, broad-shouldered figure, likely one of his bodyguards. They were both clearly drunk, voices loud, steps stumbling a bit. Perfect. I melted further back into the shadows as they paused just outside the door. They lit cigarettes, the flares of their lighters briefly illuminating their faces. I recognized the other man now, Bruno, one of the goons who always tailed Vinny. Bruno's beefy face scanned the alley, doing his due diligence even while buzzed. I held my breath. After a moment, he muttered, "Coast is clear, boss," and took a drag on his smoke. "Hell of a turnout tonight," Vinny slurred, sounding pleased with himself. "Told you the sob story'd pack the place. People love a good tragedy when the drinks are cheap." He laughed, a grating sound. My jaw clenched. The sob story of my brother's death was a marketing ploy to sell booze, in Vinny's eyes. I tightened my grip on the length of pipe I'd picked up off the ground earlier. It wasn't part of my original plan, but if Bruno stuck close, I might need to persuade him to back off. A quick crack to the head usually does the trick. They started walking down the alley, toward me and the street beyond. I slid behind the dumpster, heart thudding. Timing would be everything. As they drew abreast of my hiding spot, Vinny was still rambling. Kid was a damn shame. Could have been a star. "If only he'd listened," Bruno grunted. "Yeah, you warned him, boss. Some folks just gotta learn the hard way." I saw red. That was as good as an admission. My muscles tensed, ready. The second they passed me, I exploded out of the darkness. With a savage yell, I swung the pipe at Bruno's knee from behind. It connected with a dull thud. Bruno cried out, his leg buckling as he crumpled to the pavement. In almost the same motion, I dropped the pipe and lunged at Vinny. "The foo!" Vinny managed to sputter, eyes wide. He fumbled inside his jacket, likely for a weapon. Too slow. I drove my shoulder into his chest like it was round one in the ring, slamming him hard into the brick wall. His skull cracked against brick, and his cigarette flew from his lips. Before he could recover, I pressed my forearm against his throat, pinning him. Bruno was cursing, rolling on the ground, clutching his shattered knee. He wouldn't be a problem immediately, but I needed to hurry. His shout might have been heard. "Tommy!" "Jesus!" Vinny choked out, recognizing me at last. His breath reeked of whiskey and cigar smoke. He struggled, but I was fueled by fury and adrenaline. I shoved harder, making him gag. "You're gonna answer some questions, you piece of shit," I snarled, spitting the words inches from his face. In the dim light, I could see panic bloom in his eyes. "Good." Bruno started to rise, drawing a pistol from his ankle holster. Damn it. I couldn't let him get a shot off. I released Vinny with one hand, just long enough to snatch my revolver from my waistband. The moment Bruno lifted his gun, I brought my .38 up and fired. The gun's bang was thunderous in the alley. Bruno howled and dropped his piece, collapsing back as he clutched at his shoulder. I must have winged him. "Fine." Vinny flinched at the shot, eyes wild. I pressed the hot barrel of my revolver against Vinny's cheek. He froze, breath rasping under my forearm. "You just don't learn, do you, Tommy?" Vinny rasped, trying to sound brave, but his voice quivered. "Assaulting me like this, you're dead. The family will." "Shut up." I barked and slammed the back of his head into the wall again. He yelped. "The family." I hissed. "Where were they when Mikey was being killed in that ring? Huh? What did you do to him?" Vinny's face twisted in a grimace. "It was an accident, you crazy bastard. You think I wanted the kid dead? He was worth more alive." I applied more pressure to his throat and cheek with gun in hand. "Don't lie to me. I heard what you said to Bruno just now. If only he'd listened." "Listened to what? Did you tell Hayes to hurt him?" Vinny's eyes darted, calculating. Despite his fear, he clung to his lies. "Tommy, you got it wrong. That was just talk." I jammed the revolver harder against his cheek, the metal grinding against bone. "Next one goes in your skull, Vinny," I growled, voice low and deadly. "You think I won't? After what you did, you think I got anything to lose?" He believed me. I saw it in the way a bead of sweat rolled down his temple. "Okay. Okay," he sputtered, hands raised. "Yes, I told Mikey to take a fall. But I didn't order no kill. That was never the plan." "Then what was the plan?" I demanded, easing my forearm just enough for him to speak. Vinny coughed, sucking in air. It was just business. The big man, Eddie Marino, he put a lot of money on Hayes. We needed Mikey to go down in the fifth. He was supposed to take a dive like you. Vinny's voice was a frantic rush. Your brother, stubborn kid, he refused. We warned him, but he said he'd rather lose honest than cheat. So Marino told Hayes to make sure Mikey didn't win. Rough him up, you know? Not kill him, just put the fear in him. My stomach churned with rage, but I forced myself to keep listening. My hand holding the gun was steady, but my trigger finger twitched with desire to end him right there. So Hayes was in on it, I said icily. Vinny nodded rapidly. Hayes is Marino's boy. He'd do anything for a big payout. So he carried it too far, I swear none of us expected. Mikey's head. He trailed off, perhaps realizing there was no good way to spin a death. I pictured Hayes throwing that monstrous hook with murderous intent and had to stop myself from pulling the trigger in fury. So my brother is dead because of a bet, I said quietly. All this was over money. It's always about money, Tommy, Vinny pleaded. Think, why would I want either of you dead? Alive, you two make me money. This was just, it got out of hand. Out of hand. Like it was some bar brawl that went a bit too far, not the death of a 22-year-old kid. I sneered. Out of hand. You greedy, lying scum. You set him up, and now he's gone. And you think that makes it better, that it was just business. I'm sorry. Vinny blurted, tears in his eyes now as the gun pressed on. Tommy, I am. I liked Mikey. But you gotta understand, if he had just done what he was told, he'd be alive and a little richer. This was his fault as much as... The words didn't finish. Red haze filled my vision. With a roar, I smashed the butt of my gun across Vinny's face. I felt his cheekbone crack. He howled in pain. I grabbed him by the lapels and threw him down onto the dirty alley ground. Vinny scrambled, spitting blood, trying to crawl backward, but I advanced like a predator on prey. Bruno was whimpering a few feet away, clutching his wounded shoulder. You're fucking crazy, Bruno groaned at me, half sitting. You kill him, you're a dead man, Grayson. Shut your mouth, I snapped, kicking Bruno's dropped pistol farther out of his reach. I pounced on Vinny, straddling his chest, pinning him. His nose was bleeding, face a mask of terror. I pressed the revolver under his chin now, forcing his head back against the pavement. He trembled beneath me. Tommy, please, he sniveled, all bravado gone. Some distant, sane voice in my head told me not to shoot. A gunshot would draw attention for sure, cops or more of Marino's men. But I wasn't here to kill Vinny just yet. I needed more answers. And maybe something else he could provide. Where's Marino now? I demanded. Does he know what I'm doing? Vinny swallowed hard, Adam's apple bobbing against the gun barrel. I don't know. He probably heard you went nuts after the fight. Everybody did. Marino's keeping a low profile. But he's real pissed, Tommy. Losing that bet money, and now you attacking me? He's put a hit out on you, I'm sure of it. That wasn't surprising. I just about declared war the moment I jumped Vinny. But hearing it confirmed, my life was officially forfeit in the mob's eyes, oddly gave me calm. I was already in hell. What more could they do? I leaned in. Let them come. But I'll get to Marino first. You're gonna help me do that. Vinny's eyes widened anew. Help you? Are you insane? If I help you, I'm a dead man too. I snarled. You're a dead man now if you don't. I thumbed back the hammer of the revolver for effect. The metallic click rang in the night. Vinny flinched violently. Okay. Okay, he cried. What do you want? Information. Access. I want to draw Marino out. And you're going to be the bait. Vinny started shaking his head frantically. No way he'll know. I pressed the gun harder. Figure out a way, Vincent. Or you go in the river tonight. Tears mixed with blood on his cheeks. He was silent a moment, trembling, thinking. Bruno groaned again nearby, and I shot him a glare to stay quiet. Vinny licked his lips. Marino trusts me. Maybe I could tell him I have you restrained somewhere. That I caught you off guard. Use myself as the hero delivering you to him. I considered it. It was risky. Marino might not show up personally for that. Would he come himself, or just send more goons? Vinny coughed, spitting to the side. He might come. He hates loose ends, and he likes to handle big problems personally. But he'd bring others. I expected as much. Where? Vinny's eyes darted. Maybe the warehouse on Pier 18. Marino uses it for private meetings. It's isolated. We could lure him there, say tomorrow night. Pier 18. By the Hudson. Sounded fitting. My heart drummed with grim purpose. If I could get Marino in the open, maybe I had a chance to end this. but I needed to not get myself killed in the process. And I had to decide what to do with Vinny and Bruno right now. I couldn't exactly let them walk away. If I let Vinny go, he could just warn Marino for real. If I kept him under watch, how? I gritted my teeth. The cleaner solution was to remove them from the board. But coldly executing two men in an alley, even after all this, that gave me pause. It's not who I wanted to be. But did I have a choice? As I wrestled internally, Bruno suddenly lunged at my back with a roar of pain and fury. He must have forced himself up, adrenaline overcoming injury. I half turned and saw a glint of metal. Bruno had pulled a knife from somewhere and was stabbing downward toward my shoulder. I jerked aside. The blade sliced my upper arm instead of my back. Hot pain seared through me. I shouted and rolled off Vinny, trying to twist free. Bruno's momentum carried him past me, landing hard on the pavement where I'd been. Snarling through the pain, I scrambled to my feet. Bruno was rising too, knife in one hand, the other arm hanging where he was shot. He slashed wildly at me. I jumped back, but the tip opened a line across my chest, tearing my shirt and skin. I hissed at the sting. He came again, thrusting. This time I was ready. I sidestepped and trapped his knife arm under mine, just like trapping an opponent's glove in a clinch. Bruno's eyes widened as I slammed a fist into his face, once, twice, feeling his nose crunch on the second blow. He staggered, but the big bastard didn't drop. Instead, he roared and charged forward, tackling me. We fell back grappling, and I lost hold of my gun in the tumble. It skittered across the ground. Bruno landed on top of me, knocking the wind out of my lungs. His forearm pressed on my throat now, tables turned. He raised the knife high with his good arm, aiming to plunge it down into my chest. I fought the pressure on my windpipe, trying to twist free. My fingers scrabbled on the asphalt and closed around something, the metal pipe from earlier. With a desperate yell, I swung it upward just as Bruno drove the knife down. The pipe cracked against his wrist. There was a snap of bone. Bruno howled, dropping the knife. Rage fueled me. I shoved him off and rolled on top. Now I was straddling Bruno, like I had Vinny moments before. Bruno's face was bloodied, contorted with pain and anger. I didn't give him a chance for another attack. I began raining down punches, bare-fisted, all my weight behind them. Left, right, left, each blow connecting with sickening force. "This is for Mikey," I shouted, fist crashing into his jaw. He spit blood. "And this for me." Another punch, splitting his lip wide. Bruno's resistance faded as I pounded him mercilessly. His good arm flailed, then went limp. I barely noticed. I was lost in a red fog of vengeance. I might have killed him right there with my bare hands if a whimper from the side hadn't pulled me back. Vinny, trying to crawl away. "Help," he was rasping weakly toward the club door. Smart, call for help where all his friends were. They likely hadn't heard the fight over the music, but someone might step out any minute. Panting, I stood up off Bruno's unconscious, or dead, form. My knuckles were raw and wet with blood, his or mine, probably both. I retrieved my revolver from the ground and stalked over to Vinny, who was barely dragging himself forward with his elbows. I grabbed him by the collar and hauled him up. He screamed, whether from the sudden pain or sheer terror. I clamped a hand over his mouth. "Quiet," I snarled in his ear. "We're going for a little ride." He wriggled feebly, but I jammed the revolver into his gut, and that settled him. In a half daze of pain and adrenaline, I dragged Vinny down the alley toward where I'd parked my Chevy around the corner. I left Bruno where he lay. He looked breathing, barely. I doubted he'd be a problem now, and I couldn't carry two. By some miracle, we made it to the car without anyone else appearing. I shoved Vinny into the trunk, binding his wrists with the duct tape I had waiting there. He was moaning from his injuries, but I had no sympathy left to give. I slapped a strip of tape over his mouth too for good measure. I slammed the trunk lid, cutting off his muffled protests. The adrenaline was wearing off, and I felt the hot pain from my arm and chest wounds pulse. I'd need to patch myself up soon. But first, get out of here. I slid into the driver's seat, started the car, and peeled away from the curb. In my rearview, the alley receded. My hands were shaking on the wheel. Jesus, what had I done? I'd possibly killed one man and kidnapped another, a mob lieutenant at that. There was no going back now. I was all in. But as insane and violent as that had been, I felt a grim satisfaction. I had one of the bastards in my trunk who could help bring down the rest. If I could survive what came next, maybe I'd see justice for Mikey after all. I drove to an abandoned auto garage on the outskirts of town, an old haunt where I knew no one would disturb us. There, I hauled Vinny out of the trunk. He'd passed out, which made it easier to tie him securely to a metal chair in a back room littered with tire rims and dust. I slapped him awake, and he jolted, eyes darting in confusion until memory returned, and he started whimpering behind the tape on his mouth. My wounds needed tending. I found a relatively clean rag and some bottled water in my stash at the garage to clean the cut on my arm and the slash on my chest. The bleeding had mostly stopped, which was lucky. I'd have a scar or two, but nothing fatal. With that done, I turned my attention to my prisoner. I ripped the tape off his mouth in one swift motion. He yelped. "Please, Tommy," Vinny babbled immediately. "We can work something out. You want money? I got money. Revenge won't bring your brother back." I silenced him with a backhand across the face. My patience for his cowardice was spent. "We already worked something out. You're bait for Marino. That hasn't changed." I grabbed a water bottle and practically poured it over his head, washing away some of the blood and perking him up, ensuring he stayed conscious. He coughed and sputtered. "You're making a mistake," he groaned. "Marino will kill you, kill us both." I stared at him, cold fury in my veins. "Better men than him have tried to kill me tonight. I'm still here. So let me worry about Marino. You just worry about making that phone call to set him up." I pulled out Vinny's cell phone from his suit pocket. Miraculously, it hadn't broken in our scuffle. I checked the time, 3 a.m. Marino probably wouldn't act until daylight at least. I waved the phone at Vinny. "Call him. Tell him you have me tied up somewhere. Make something up to get him to Pier 18 tomorrow night." Vinny hesitated, licking a cut on his lip. "If I do, you promise to let me live." I glared, considering. "You help me get Marino, and I'll consider letting you walk. Maybe." It was the best carrot I was willing to dangle, and it was hardly a pinky promise. But Vinny nodded quickly, desperate for any chance. He took the phone in his taped hands awkwardly as I held it. His fingers dialed a number with familiarity. My muscles tensed. This was it. The phone rang, and after a few beats, a gruff voice answered, audible enough in the quiet garage that I could make it out. "Yeah." The voice was unmistakably Eddie Marino's. I'd only heard it once or twice, but it had a gravelly, commanding tone. Vinny gave me a quick pleading look, then launched into it. "Boss, it's Vinny. I got good news. I caught Tommy Grayson. Yeah, the guy's gone nuts. He jumped me outside Caruso's, but I managed to subdue him. He's out cold. Must have been drunk or high, I dunno." I rolled my eyes at Vinny's added color, but at least Marino was listening. I could faintly hear his surprise. Marino asked something I couldn't make out fully, maybe where. "Or how bad are you hurt?" Vinny continued. "I'm fine, just a bump. I got him tied up at that old auto shop by Pier 18. Figured you'd want to handle this personally, given what he did. And, considering he cost you money." There was a pause. I strained to catch Marino's response. It was low, but I thought I heard a satisfied chuckle and a muttered, "Good work." Then clearer, Marino said, "Sit tight. I'll be there tomorrow night. Midnight. And Vinny, nice job." The call ended. Vinny let out a shaky breath, looking at me. He bought it. Tomorrow at midnight. My heart thumped. There it was. Marino was coming. I had less than 24 hours to prepare for the biggest fight of my life. No referees, no judges, just survival. I took the phone and promptly removed the battery to prevent any tracking or secondary calls. Then I tied Vinny securely to a support beam in the garage, giving him just enough slack to sit or stand, but nowhere to go. I left him some water. I wasn't totally heartless, or maybe I just needed him alive a bit longer, and gagged him with a rag. Before leaving, I looked him dead in the eye. "If you scream or try anything, there's rats in here that'd love to chew on your fingers. And I'll let them." "Understood." He nodded vigorously, tears of self-pity in his eyes. I shut the door to the little office he was in and locked it with a heavy chain for good measure. Exhausted, I sat on an old crate in the adjacent room. Dawn was a couple hours off. My body ached from the brawl earlier, but my mind raced with planning. I had one shot at this. Marino would come with men. I needed an ambush, some advantage. The mention of Pier 18 was my doing, partly because I knew the area. Abandoned warehouses by the Hudson, not far from where a lot of unsavory business happened. A poetic thought crossed my mind. If all went well, maybe both Marino and Vinny would end up in the Hudson, just like all the mob's victims. It seemed fitting. I allowed myself a moment to think of Mikey. If he could see me now, kidnapping, beating men, plotting murder, Would he even recognize his brother? A wave of sorrow rolled through me. But I steeled myself. I hadn't started this war, but I'd damn sure finish it. For Mikey's sake. Leaning back against the cold wall, I closed my eyes and pictured the plan. Luring Marino and his goons inside, isolating him, taking them out one by one if possible. It would be brutal, and it might be the end of me. But that didn't matter anymore. As I drifted off into a fitful rest, one thought repeated in my head like a mantra. No more throwing fights. This time, I fight to win. Chapter 4. The next day passed in a blur of grim preparation. I spent the morning gathering what little resources I had. I took money from Vinny's wallet. Stealing from a scumbag hardly felt like a crime, as well as a switchblade I found in his jacket pocket. I needed supplies, more ammo for the revolver, another weapon or two maybe. The .38 held 6 shots and I'd fired one at Bruno, 5 remained. Not enough if Marino brought an army. I left Vinny secured in the garage and went out to stock up. Stopping at my dingy apartment, I bandaged my arm properly and changed into dark clothes, a black hoodie and jeans, that would blend in at night. Every muscle protested my movements, but pain was good. It kept me sharp. On a hunch, I also grabbed something from my closet, my old boxing gloves, worn and frayed. A symbolic gesture, maybe. Or maybe I thought I might need some hand protection if it came to close quarters. Part of me hoped this would end with fists, not bullets. I stuffed the gloves in my duffel along with some tape and the switchblade. Next, I visited a pawn shop a few blocks over. The proprietor, an elderly Russian named Yuri, didn't bat an eye at my bruised face or the wad of cash I slapped down. In return, I got 2 extra .38 cartridges, all he had for that caliber, and a rusty crowbar. Cheap and sturdy, good for a fight. I also picked up an old burner phone, thinking I might need communication after things went down. By late afternoon, I returned to the abandoned auto shop. Vinny was where I left him, looking miserable but alive. I fed him half a sandwich I'd bought and allowed him a bathroom break, at gunpoint, in a corner drain. I wasn't completely inhuman, despite what he might think. Then I tied him back up. The hours crept by. I could barely sit still, constantly rechecking my plan and the layout of Pier 18's warehouse in my mind. I'd been there years ago, when a fellow boxer had used it for underground fights away from official eyes. It was a long, rectangular space, cluttered with crates and a second-level catwalk along the sides. Plenty of hiding spots and old junk. I decided I'd lead Marino inside under the pretense of showing him my captured self, courtesy of Vinny. But of course, I'd be free and ready. Possibly I could perch up on the catwalk and snipe a few first, but I wasn't a sharpshooter. And I half hoped to confront Marino face to face, to see the look in his eyes when he realized payback had come. Still, I had to be smart. Mikey wouldn't benefit from me getting killed in a blaze of stupid glory. I considered calling the police anonymously, tipping them off to some criminal meeting, but quickly dismissed it. Too unpredictable, and Marino probably had some in his pocket. This was between us. Evening came. I forced myself to eat a protein bar and drink water. Need strength. My hands were steady, my mind eerily calm. The adrenaline was already surging at the thought of midnight. Around 11 p.m., I loaded Vinny back into the trunk of my Chevy. He didn't fight. The man had given up trying to sway me. I think he was praying Marino would just kill me and spare him. Or maybe he was just praying, period. I didn't care. We arrived at Pier 18 half an hour early. It was a deserted strip by the river, an old loading bay for goods that hadn't seen legitimate use in years. The water of the Hudson sloshed quietly against the dock pilings. I parked the Chevy behind a stack of rusted shipping containers, out of immediate sight. The warehouse loomed nearby, a hulking dark shape with broken windows like empty eye sockets. A single lamp on a pole outside provided meager light at the entrance. The place was deathly quiet. I opened the trunk. "All right, out," I ordered, gun in hand. Vinny squinted in the dark, shivering a bit in the night air. I cut the tape binding his ankles so he could walk, but kept his hands tied. I left the gag off for now. "Remember," I warned him in a low voice, "play it cool. We're partners in crime until Marino's dealt with. You cross me, you die first." He nodded, rubbing his wrists through the tape. "I get it," he whispered. He looked pathetic, with dried blood on his shirt and a black eye forming. Hard to believe I once feared this sniveling coward. We moved into the warehouse. Inside, the air smelled of damp and oil. In the faint light from outside and a few moonbeams through the roof, I could make out the shapes of stacked wooden pallets, some discarded barrels, and farther back, metal stairs to the catwalk. Perfect. I directed Vinny to a support column at roughly center of the open space and tied him loosely to it, like he had been overpowered and left there. To sell the setup, I put a piece of tape back over his mouth and ruffled him up a bit for show, making sure he looked like a captive. Then I climbed up the metal staircase to the catwalk above, positioning myself in a shadowy corner that still had a view of the ground floor. I had the revolver loaded with the two extra rounds I'd gotten, giving me 7 shots total now, 6-cylinder plus 1 reload round I'd have to manually slot in later. Not ideal, but it was something. The crowbar I laid at my feet, the switchblade tucked in my pocket. And for some reason, I'd wrapped my hands in my old boxing wraps, snug and tight. It gave me a sense of readiness, like prepping for a bout. The gloves themselves I left in the duffel by my side, not worn, no time for laces in a fight. Then I waited. Just before midnight, I heard the crunch of tires on gravel outside. My pulse quickened. Headlights briefly flashed through the cracks in the warehouse walls, and then went dark. Car doors slammed. At least 2, maybe more. I gripped the revolver, took a deep breath, and steadied my resolve. A flashlight beam cut through the darkness from the entrance, dancing across the concrete floor. "Vinny? You in here?" a voice called. "Marino." Had to be. I peeked through a gap in the railing. Figures entered the warehouse, 3 of them, from what I could see by their flashlights. One bigger shape flanked by 2 others. They advanced cautiously. They spotted Vinny tied to the column. The flashlights trained on him, and the men moved closer. I could see them better now. Marino was a tall, broad-shouldered man in an overcoat, fedora tilted back on his head. He looked like a mob boss from Central Casting, except more feral, with a thick beard and a scar across his nose. To his left was a wiry man holding a pistol with a mounted light. To his right, a bald thug built like a bulldog, also armed. Marino approached Vinny, who writhed and made muffled sounds on cue. "Where is he?" Marino asked sharply, looking around. "Where's Grayson?" This was the critical moment. If they sensed the trap too soon, I was done. I decided to play my part and stepped out onto the catwalk, where a sliver of light hit me. "Looking for me?" I called out. All 3 flashlights whipped upward, blinding me momentarily. I ducked back behind a support beam just as a gunshot echoed. One of them fired at where I'd been. The bullet pinged off metal. The loud blast rang in the open space. My heart pounded, but I felt a strange calm too. I had announced myself, and now it was on. "Grayson!" Marino's voice boomed with fury. "You got some fucking nerve." He gestured to his men. "Spread out. Up there." I realized then Marino hadn't brought an army, just these 2 henchmen. Either he underestimated me, or he wanted to handle this quietly. Probably both. Fine by me. Footsteps thudded as one of the goons started up the metal staircase on the opposite side of the warehouse, while the other remained with Marino, covering him. I moved quickly along the catwalk in darkness, trying to flank the climbing thug. From below, Marino kept talking, his voice echoing. "You know how many rules you broke, you lowlife? You think you can kill my guy, kidnap my associate, and walk away?" He was circling near Vinny, who was still tied and acting as bystander now. I didn't reply. I focused. The man coming up onto the catwalk was the wiry one with the flashlight on his pistol. He reached the top, scanning his light and muzzle around. The beam passed over me, and I pressed flat to the floor behind a crate. He edged closer. Come out, wherever you are," he sang quietly, trying to provoke me. He couldn't see me, but he'd reach me in seconds if I didn't move. Quietly, I slid the switchblade out and flicked it open, holding it in my left hand. Revolver in right. Once he got near enough, I planned to strike fast, maybe close enough to not miss. I heard his soft footsteps approach the crate I hid behind. I tensed, coiling like a spring. The flashlight beam crept along the floor, then up the crate, then around it. The moment I saw the tip of the gun and his hand come around, I lunged. I grabbed his gun arm with my left, knife hand, and shoved it upward as he fired reflexively, bang. A deafening shot into the rafters. Simultaneously, I jammed my own revolver right into his gut and pulled the trigger. The muffled boom was more felt than heard at point blank. The man crumpled with a choked scream, the flashlight clattering down and rolling, casting crazy arcs of light. My shot hit him somewhere in the belly, probably fatal but not instant. He writhed on the catwalk floor, moaning. His pistol had fallen. 1 down. 2 to go. "Jake!" the bald guy shouted from below, alarmed. He must have realized his buddy found me and got the worst of it. Without hesitation, I scooped up the fallen pistol with the flashlight. It was a nice Glock, and fired a couple blind shots down toward the voices below, to make them scatter. The muzzle flash gave me a quick image. The bald thug diving behind a stack of pallets, Marino ducking near a support pillar dragging Vinny as a shield in front of him. I grimaced. Marino had yanked Vinny off the post, and was using his tied body as cover. My shots went wild, but I heard Baldy return fire, and bullets whizzed past, one smacking into the metal railing near me with a spray of sparks. I dropped flat and crawled along the catwalk in the dark, trying to reposition. "Tommy!" Marino yelled, his voice a dangerous purr now. "This doesn't end well for you. You think you're some hero avenging his brother? You're just a dead man walking." Hearing him talk about Mikey ignited me further. "Keep talking, Marino. Might make it easier to find you," I taunted from somewhere in the dark. I needed him angry and distracted. He laughed, a harsh echo. "That what you want? Me to tell you a bedtime story? How about the one where your dumb kid brother could have been rich, but chose to be a hero instead? Real tragic, that one." My finger itched on the trigger. But I stayed hidden for the moment. Baldy was moving along the ground, trying to find a vantage to shoot me. Meanwhile, Marino kept low behind poor Vinny. I decided to level the field. "Hey, Marino," I shouted. "How's Vinny doing down there?" "Not too good, huh? Your loyal dog got himself caught in a trap." Marino barked, "Vinny's replaceable. You think I care? I'm using him as a shield right now, in case you hadn't noticed." I heard Vinny's muffled protests at that. So much for loyalty among thieves. Marino would sooner catch a bullet in Vinny than risk himself. An idea sparked. Vinny was effectively immobilized and in Marino's grip. If I could make Marino drop him. From my vantage, I peered and could just see the top of Marino's hat past a crate. I switched tactics. "This is for Mikey, you son of a bitch," I cried, deliberately giving away my location as I popped up and fired my revolver twice down at Marino's shape. As expected, Marino jerked Vinny upward to block. I heard one shot hit flesh with a sick thud. Vinny screamed behind his gag as the bullet meant for Marino lodged in Vinny's shoulder. Marino was literally using him like a meat shield. But in that moment, Baldy had a clear line of sight to me. He fired. His shot grazed my leg, a searing stripe of pain across my thigh. I dropped back behind cover, biting back a curse. So much for that. However, my maneuver had one effect. Marino tossed Vinny aside now, probably figuring his shield was compromised or just plain pissed that Vinny got shot and bled on him. I heard Vinny's body hit the ground, whimpering. Now footsteps heavy on the metal stairs. Marino himself was coming up one of the staircases to the catwalk, determined to handle me. I welcomed that, one fewer angle to watch. But I still had Baldy below to worry about. Speaking of, Baldy started spraying bullets upward to cover Marino. Gunfire ripped through wood and metal around me. I flattened down as splinters flew. He was peppering the catwalk blindly. The gunfire ceased, probably reloading. I seized the moment to move. I crawled quickly toward the staircase opposite where Marino was coming up, keeping low. The Glock with flashlight was still in my hand. My revolver I had holstered at my belt for now since the Glock had more rounds. Suddenly a beam of light hit me. Marino was at the top of the stairs, shining his own flashlight. "Got you now," he growled. He fired and I felt a hammer blow to my left arm. A bullet clipped my bicep. I grunted, nearly dropping the Glock. I ducked behind a support pillar on the catwalk as Marino kept shooting, each shot reverberating in the cavernous space. One bullet zinged off the railing near my head, another went wide. Now I was pinned, crouched behind the steel pillar on the creaking catwalk. Marino started advancing toward me methodical. I could see him now by his flashlight, which he kept trained in my direction. He held a hefty handgun in the other hand and looked murderously calm. Below, Baldy must have reloaded because shots pinged up again. One struck the pillar I hid behind, making me flinch. They had me triangulated. Marino closing from one side above, Baldy firing from below. This was bad. I had to eliminate one threat. Marino was closer, but Baldy was easier to hit if I leaned out. Yet focusing on Baldy would let Marino push up on me. Then an unexpected sound. Sirens, faint but growing. Police? Someone must have reported the gunshots or the commotion. That or maybe security in the area got alerted. Marino heard it too. He snarled a curse. They'd want to finish this fast. He gestured to Baldy below. "Wrap it up. I'll handle him. You go slow the cops down." Baldy shouted back. On it, boss, and I heard him running toward the entrance. Good, one threat gone for the moment, although he might be back. The sirens could also complicate things for me, but right now I'd use every distraction. I peeked around the pillar. Marino was maybe 20 feet away, closing slowly, gun raised. I fired the Glock at him twice. He ducked, and one of my shots winged his hat off his head. He responded with a flurry of his own. I pulled back as bullets tore into the pillar and the metal walkway, one grazing my calf. I bit back a cry as pain jolted up my leg. He was close now, and I was running out of catwalk behind me. It ended about 5 feet away. If I backed up further, I'd drop to the floor. Marino laughed darkly, sensing victory. This is as far as you go, Grayson. You should have stayed down like the dog you are. Oddly, I felt a calm clarity in that moment. Scenes flashed in my head. Mikey smiling before the fight, Mikey collapsing under Hayes' punch, Vinny's smirk, Bruno's knife, and now this hulking shadow of a mob boss closing in. All my life I'd been told to stay down, take the fall, protect myself by yielding. And all it brought was misery. No more. I holstered the empty Glock, out of ammo now, and did something reckless. I stepped out from cover with only the crowbar in hand and leapt off the catwalk. The drop was about 10 feet. I landed in a heap on the concrete floor below, rolling to absorb impact as best I could. Pain shot through my knees and shoulder, but adrenaline numbed it. I was now below Marino, who was momentarily startled I'd chosen to drop rather than be cornered. He quickly leaned over the railing, aiming down at me. I was exposed. With a roar, I hurled the crowbar upward at him. It wasn't a well-aimed throw. I'm no quarterback, but luck was on my side. The metal bar whirled and struck Marino in the forearm, just as he fired. His shot went wild, and he let out a shout of pain, dropping his flashlight. Capitalizing, I scrambled to my feet. My body protested, probably twisted an ankle on that jump, but I forced it to move. I ran toward the base of the stairs. Marino cursed loudly, his heavy boots clanging as he rushed down the staircase in pursuit, now half illuminated by the one remaining flashlight on the ground floor, probably the one Baldy dropped. As he reached the bottom, I was ready in the shadows beside the stairwell. He came off the last step, gun in hand, but momentarily pointing forward, not seeing me to his side in the dimness. I exploded out with a wild haymaker punch to his gut. My fist, still wrapped, slammed into his midsection. He oofed but kept his footing. Man was solid like a tree trunk. He swung toward me, gun coming around. I seized his wrist with both hands before he could point it at me and twisted with all my might. His fingers squeezed a shot off into the ground, and then the gun fell from his grasp as I wrenched his arm. Marino responded with a brute punch of his own, a left hook that clipped the side of my head. It was like getting hit with a brick. I saw stars, releasing his arm as I stumbled. He followed with a right that caught my cheek, and I tasted blood. Boxer instincts kicked in. I brought my hands up in a guard just in time to absorb his next punch on my forearms. Even so, it drove me back. He was strong, but I'd felt stronger in the ring. And he was a bit slower, age and size working against him. I ducked a wild swing and planted a fist into his jaw. A satisfying crack. He grunted and answered by lunging forward, tackling me. We hit the ground hard, grappling. He got a hand around my throat and started squeezing, using his weight to pin me. I gasped, struggling under him. He growled, face inches from mine. You think you can take us all out, you dumb pug? I run this city. I'll send you to hell with your brother. Hearing him mention Mikey sparked one final surge. I was not dying here, not to this filth. I managed to get my knee up between our bodies and kicked out, using his own momentum to roll him off me to the side. His grip on my throat broke as he fell onto his back. I sucked in air and sprang up as best I could, wobbling. Marino was on one knee reaching for the gun he'd dropped, only a yard away on the floor. I lunged and stomped on his hand with my boot. He roared in pain. I kicked the pistol away behind me, then grabbed Marino by the collar and drove my knee into his face. Once, twice, his nose burst in a spray of blood. He bellowed, stunned. This was it. The rage, the grief, all focused. I hauled the mob boss up slightly and delivered a right hook square to his jaw. His head snapped to the side, spitting blood. Before he could recover, I gave him a left to the gut, then another right across the temple. He swung blindly, catching my shoulder with a glancing blow, but I barely felt it. You killed him. I shouted between strikes, my voice cracking with fury. A fist to his ribs. You took my brother. an uppercut to his chin that made his teeth clack loudly. Marino stumbled back, barely staying up, arms flailing. I advanced, relentless. I could hear sirens louder now and maybe shouting outside. The cops were close, or maybe in the building, but I didn't care at this moment. Marino coughed, blood running from his lips. He tried one last swing, roaring like a wounded animal. I weaved to the side, his fist whooshing past my ear, and countered with a brutal cross that landed flush on his jaw. The big man finally went down. He collapsed to the concrete, landing flat on his back, staring at the ceiling with dazed eyes. I stood over him, chest heaving, fists still raised. Every inch of me hurt, but I barely noticed over the thunder in my ears. I wanted to finish it, end him for good. I panted, adrenaline and vengeance urging me on. Marino's eyes focused on me, hate burning in them despite his broken state. "Do it," he gurgled, half taunting, half begging. "Finish it, you coward." I straddled him and cocked my fist back for the final blow that would crush his windpipe or nose into his brain, whatever came first. "Freeze. Police." The harsh command cut through the haze. Suddenly, there were red and blue lights strobing through the broken windows and multiple flashlight beams dancing around us. I became aware of several figures at the warehouse entrance, guns drawn, voices shouting. Two cops rushed in, taking cover behind pillars, guns trained on us. "Don't move. Hands up," one barked. For a second, I almost ignored them, ready to end Marino regardless and damn the consequences. But a faint voice in me, perhaps Mikey's, stayed my hand. Slowly, I unclenched my fist and raised my hands, stepping back from Marino's unconscious, or semi-conscious, body. A cop approached cautiously and pushed me down onto my knees, yanking my arms back. I didn't resist. A flurry of activity followed. More officers swarming in, some attending to Marino, who was groaning, others finding Vinny tied up and the wounded thug upstairs. It was chaos of a different sort now. My cheek was pressed to the cold concrete as they cuffed me. I caught a glimpse of Vinny being let out, babbling to the police about being kidnapped. Marino was spitting curses even while two officers cuffed him too and read him his rights. He locked eyes with me once as they hauled him up. In them I saw pure malice, but also fear. He knew his reign was over, if not by my hand, then by law. They had him on multiple counts now, not to mention the giant bet-fixing conspiracy that might unravel. Funny enough, I realized, Marino going to prison might be a more fitting punishment than me killing him. A control freak like him, rotting in a cell, powerless. Perhaps that's the poetic justice Mikey would appreciate. As they dragged me to my feet and started escorting me out, an older cop with a weary face looked me in the eye. "Hell of a mess here. You okay, son?" I blinked, surprised at the concern. I was bleeding from multiple wounds and could barely stand, but I nodded. "My brother," I croaked, voice exhausted. "They killed my brother." The cop gently guided me toward a waiting ambulance. "I know. We'll sort it out. Just hang in there." Out on the pier, as paramedics tended to my wounds and officers swarmed the scene, I realized it was finally over. The war path I'd walked was ending not in a blaze of bullets in the Hudson, but under flashing sirens and a chance, just a chance, at some form of justice. Chapter 5. 2 months later, I stood at the edge of the Hudson River, the cold November wind biting at my face. The water was calm today, lapping gently against the pier. Gray skies overhead matched the chill in my bones. I came here often since that night, drawn by some morbid gravity to the place where everything changed. A lot had happened in those 2 months. Eddie Marino was behind bars, denied bail as he awaited trial on a laundry list of charges ranging from racketeering to conspiracy to commit murder. The NYPD and feds descended on his organization like vultures once I spilled everything I knew. Vinny, the rat that he was, sang even louder than me to save his own skin, corroborating my story about the fixed fights and brother's death. Last I heard, Vinny was in witness protection, terrified of any remaining Marino loyalists hunting him down. Suited him fine, the coward would live the rest of his life in hiding. The newspapers had a field day. "Boxer turns tables on mob" was one headline. "Glass jaw. Fighter takes down crime boss" was another, with a grainy photo of me on a stretcher, bruised but alive, fist raised in defiance. It was surreal. They painted me as a kind of vigilante hero avenging his brother. Some called for charges against me to be dropped, given the circumstances. Public sympathy was surprisingly on my side. Legally, things were still shaking out. I was charged initially with assault, illegal firearm possession, a bunch of stuff. But my lawyer, supplied by a certain Detective Alvarez who felt I did the city a favor, was confident most of it would be dismissed or result in a slap on the wrist. Especially since my testimony was key to nailing Marino. Detective Alvarez had been working organized crime for years, and Marino's bust was the biggest in decades. He saw me not as a perp, but as a survivor and a crucial witness. I absently fingered the small object in my hand, Mikey's boxing pendant. It was a cheap little thing, a glove charm on a chain, that he used to wear for luck. They had removed it when he was in the hospital, and Hooks gave it to me later. I kept it like a talisman. I closed my fist around it and took a deep breath of the icy air. "We got him, Mikey," I murmured to the wind. "Marino and his goons. They won't hurt anyone again. Not in a long time, maybe never." There was no answer except the distant cry of a seagull. A lump rose in my throat. I had the closure of justice, but the wound of Mikey's absence was still raw. It would always be. Footsteps sounded on the wooden pier behind me. I turned to see Detective Alvarez approaching. He was in plain clothes, a long coat over a suit, his fedora pulled low against the wind. In another life, he could have been a character in a noir film himself. "Thought I'd find you here," Alvarez said as he came up. He offered a paper cup of hot coffee from the vendor across the street. I accepted it gratefully, wrapping my cold hands around it. "Thanks," I said quietly. "What brings you out here, detective?" Alvarez gave me a once-over, perhaps checking how I was holding up. I'd lost some weight and still sported a fading bruise or two, but otherwise I was recovering. "I wanted to tell you in person. Marino took a plea deal this morning. That perked me up." "Oh, I thought he was going to trial." "He was, but his lawyers must have convinced him the evidence was too strong. Your testimony, Vinny's financial records we seized, not to mention his attempted murder of you in front of law enforcement. It was ironclad. He pleaded guilty to avoid the death penalty on the murder. He'll get life without parole." I let out a breath I didn't realize I was holding. Life without parole. Marino would die in prison. It was as close to justice as this world could give. A weight lifted from my shoulders. The looming specter that maybe the bastard would wiggle out of it was gone. "Good," I said softly. I took a sip of the coffee. It was strong and scalding, just what I needed. That's really good." Alvarez nodded. "Also means the DA is inclined to be lenient with you. The word is, they'll drop most charges. At most, you might get probation for the weapons charge and the, altercation with Caruso and Bruno." "Ah, Bruno. He survived, by the way, lost the use of that knee I smashed and nearly bled out from the gunshot, but he lived. He'd likely never walk right again, which I can't say I lost sleep over. Probation. I could live with that. It was more than fair." I gave Alvarez a crooked smile. "Not bad for a dead man walking. Huh?" He chuckled. "I've seen a lot in this job. What you did was extreme, no doubt. But you rid this city of a parasite. Off the record, we're grateful." I turned back to gaze at the water. A barge was chugging along far out on the Hudson, leaving a gentle wake. The city skyline loomed to the north, indifferent and eternal. "So what now for you?" Alvarez asked after a moment. "Any plans?" I sighed, considering. The last 2 months had been so full of legal chaos and media frenzy, I hadn't really thought about the future beyond dealing with all that. "I don't know," I admitted. "Boxing's out of the picture. I'm banned for that stunt I pulled, not that I care. And I doubt I have a career left anyway." It was true. The Boxing Commission had revoked my license for the fight I fixed, and the mayhem after. Not that a washed-up fighter-slash-vigilante had much prospect in the ring anymore. And I didn't want it. Mikey was the fighter with a future, not me. Alvarez was silent for a bit. Then he said, "You know, you have a knack for undercover work." I glanced at him quizzically. He smirked. "Sort of kidding. But you did infiltrate and dismantle a criminal enterprise, in your own way. The department could use guts like that, minus the unsanctioned methods." I snorted. "Detective Tommy Grayson? I don't think I'm cop material, Alvarez. I appreciate it, though." He held up a hand. "Just saying. If you need a recommendation for a security job. Or something, I got contacts. What you've been through. You deserve a fresh start." Fresh start. The words lingered. How many times had I wished I could start over? Not go down the path I did. Not get involved with the mob. If I had done things differently, would Mikey still be alive? It was a torturous thought that I tried not to dwell on, but it crept in often. Survivor's guilt, they said. I shook off the dark thought and mustered a small smile at Alvarez. Thanks. I'll think about it. He clapped me on the shoulder, a warm, grounding gesture. You take care of yourself, Tommy. And if you ever need anything, you have my number. With that, Alvarez left me to my thoughts, his figure retreating back up the pier toward the bustling street. I took another long sip of coffee, letting its heat spread through me. I found myself replaying my brother's voice in my head from that day in the locker room. I'm proud of you too, when you're actually trying. In a twisted way, I hoped he could be proud now. I tried finally to do the right thing, even if it was by doing a lot of wrong along the way. The gritty path I walked led to a form of justice. But it cost me dearly. I'd never get Mikey back, never hear his goofy laugh, or see him smile with a new win under his belt. That hole would never be filled. I knelt down at the water's edge, the planks creaking under me. With a trembling hand, I opened my fist and looked at Mikey's glove pendant in my palm. The silver was tarnished and scratched, but you could still make out the tiny engravings of laces on the boxing glove charm. "I miss you, kid," I whispered, my voice almost lost in the wind. "Every damn day." My eyes burned, but I blinked the tears back. I didn't come here to cry. I came here to say goodbye properly. "I did what I promised," I continued hoarsely. "I made them pay. I got justice for you. It's not going to bring you back, but maybe you'll rest easier, knowing those bastards got what they deserved." A tear escaped and rolled down my cheek. I let it fall. I closed my eyes and remembered us as kids, sparring with Dad's oversized gloves, dreaming of championship belts. Mikey always had that spark, that fighter's spirit. And damn it, he would have been one of the greats, if not for people like Marino and Vinny and their greed. A surge of anger flared then ebbed. It was done. Dwelling on the what-ifs would destroy me. I had to let go, for both our sakes. I kissed the pendant and then, with a deep breath, I tossed Mikey's lucky charm into the Hudson. It made a tiny splash and was gone, sinking to join the detritus at the bottom of the river. Joining perhaps the ghosts of countless sins dumped here by the mob over the years. It hurt, letting that pendant go. But it felt right. Mikey's memory didn't need to be tied to a trinket, it lived in me. And maybe in some way, in every life saved because Marino's reign ended. In every young fighter who wouldn't be corrupted or hurt by that crew again. I sat there a while on the pier, legs dangling over the edge like we used to do on summer days at Coney Island when we were younger. Back when life was simpler. Ice creams and beach trips, before boxing and crime and blood. Eventually, I stood up, feeling the stiffness in my joints. My injuries had mostly healed, but some things would always ache. I turned my collar up against the wind and started to walk back toward the city streets, leaving the river behind. As I walked, I allowed myself a small grin of dark humor, thinking about one headline that particularly amused me. Glass jaw retribution. Boxer withstand blows to take down mob. They called me Glass Jaw because I had a record of knockouts, and yeah, I'd been knocked down plenty. But like any true fighter knows, having a glass jaw isn't about having no strength. It's about what you do after you hit the canvas. I was knocked down by life, by my own choices, by grief. But I got back up. Bruised, battered, not pretty, but up. No more fixed fights, no more throwing punches I didn't mean. From here on, whatever I did, I'd do it honestly. Even if I got hit and fell again, it'd be on my own terms. That much I owed Mikey. That much I owed myself. The city bustled around me as I left the pier. A taxi honking, people hustling by with early holiday shopping, the smell of pretzels from a cart on the corner. Life moving on. I slipped into the human current, just another face under the gray sky. Before I merged completely into the crowd, I took one last glance over my shoulder at the Hudson River behind me. In my mind's eye, I imagined the waters holding onto secrets, a pair of broken bodies, one manager, one mobster, metaphorically sinking down with Mikey's pendant, all the violence, betrayal, and pain submerging and settling in the depths. Let the river keep those stories. I turned my face forward and walked on, hands in pockets. New York continued to live and breathe its gritty, indifferent rhythm. But I felt something change in me as I matched its stride. For the first time in a long time, I wasn't running away or being pulled under. I was moving forward, one step at a time. The final bell had rung on this chapter of my life. And though I carried scars seen and unseen, I was still standing. In this city of glass and steel, even a glass jaw can find the strength to strike back, and maybe even heal. In the end, I didn't just survive, I fought back and won.